Well, good morning, church. As some of you probably recognized, Donnie is away this weekend. He's at a conference in Salisbury, so I get to be the substitute teacher today. And as we know, one of the great things about having a substitute teacher is we get to get out early. The other fun part about having a substitute teacher is we can kind of do a little bit different topic. As a church, we're going through the book of Proverbs right now, just talking about different wise sayings. And Donnie did give me the freedom to talk this morning about a topic that's a little more fresh to my heart, and it's actually my favorite topic. This morning we're going to be talking about sleep. And as a father, Steph and I have two wonderful little girls, 2 years and 6 years old, and they just don't sleep. I don't know if anybody can relate, but bedtime is like trench warfare. Just when we think we've got them to sleep, they just come back downstairs, and you know it takes like 2 hours to watch like a 40 minute TV show. If anybody wants a little gift this morning, I'm going to give you like the 30-second commercial, and then, you know, feel free to just sack out. I get it. You know, to cut some Z's here in church, but 30-second sermon. We're going to be talking exactly about the lyrics of that song. Can we wake up? Can we wake up as a church? Rise and shine. How do we rise? How do we rise and shine as a church? Before we get into the sermon, though, and by the way, that's your cue. I think we probably just lost Pat. He's going to sack out. But before we start on our sermon, I just want to share a little small group story. And I get to be in a men's small group every Friday morning at 6:30. That is a shameless plug. But this is a small group story from probably 15 years ago. I got to lead a young adult small group. And my wife called us a dynamic small group. We were a bunch of young adults, and we got to have a lot of fun and learn about Jesus. There was probably about 30 of us. And when you go through training as a small group leader, I'm not sure if it's true now, but they always tell you to kind of start the discussion off with like what they call an icebreaker question, a question that just kind of, you know, it's a get-to-know-you question. It's a question that kind of gets the juices flowing before you actually start the discussion. And we used to have a lot of fun with these icebreakers. We would play around with ones like, rather than just asking, what was your favorite vacation or what was your favorite food? Again, we were a young adults group, so we might come up with questions like, name three reasons why you think the person to your left is still single. Or we might make it a little more spiritual than that and say, who in the group would you like to greet with a holy kiss? I don't think we actually formally asked those questions, but I'm sure we answered them. But one day we were asked this question: what was your worst day? What was your worst day? I'm sure that was the cheery discussion that we had. I can't remember what the topic was, but that was the question: what was your worst day? And as we started going around, people were sharing, and there was a loss of a loved one, there was a loss of a dream. But we came to my friend Teal. And Teal said that his worst day was the day that he got detention. That didn't seem to line up with what everybody else was sharing, so obviously we probed a little bit more. And Teal said his worst day was the day that he got detention. And he had to stay after school while his friends got to go out and play. And while his friends were out playing, he was stuck behind, and all of his friends heard these trucks coming to the village. And that was not a normal occurrence, so naturally they ran to the village to see what was going on. Teal's worst day, the day that he got detention, was the day that war came to his little village of a wheel in South Sudan. And at 10 years old, Teal was thrust into the civil war taking place in South Sudan, into the despair, the pain, the suffering, becoming a refugee in his own country, and then a refugee in North Sudan, being part of a refugee camp. And he told me that seeing a dead body lying on the ground was a daily occurrence. They attempted to brainwash him, to put him in an army that would send him back to kill off his own countrymen. And even trying to find hope in his local church didn't work because the government pulled down his church and 9 others in the same day. And you hear stories like Teal's, what is your worst day? And the question comes to our mind, God, where are you? God, where are you in our worst days? It wasn't just Teal. I got to meet 4 other guys from South Sudan at that time, and I learned that their nickname that the aid workers had given them was the Lost Boys of Sudan. There was roughly 20,000 of these young men between ages of 7 to 15 that because of this war, they were displaced, and they would walk thousands of miles to neighboring Kenya or Ethiopia to try to find shelter. And your stories, quite honestly, were just too terrible to share this morning. You can imagine that youth in the wilderness for so long amongst predators, amongst disease, amongst war. And you have to ask the question, God, where are you in our worst days? And this story, this refugee story, it still continues today, doesn't it? I mean, just this week, Steph and I were watching a documentary on Netflix, and I'd highly recommend it. It was called Human Flow. And we're watching this, and you see these statistics of 64 million people displaced, 22 million refugees, still 1.5 million from South Sudan. And you have to ask, God, where are you in our worst days? And we have personal stories too, right? We have personal stories of hurricanes or health or loss of life. And we have to ask God, where are you in our worst days? There's a story in 1 Kings when the prophet Elijah is going up against the prophets of Baal. And I'd like us to look at it real quick. In 1 Kings 18, it says, "Then Elijah said to the prophets of Baal, 'Choose for yourselves one bull and prepare it first, for you are many, and call upon the name of God, but put no fire to it.' And they took the bull and was given to them, and they prepared it and called upon the name of Baal from morning until noon, saying, 'Oh, Baal, answer us.' But there was no voice, and no one answered. And they limped around the altar that they had made, and at noon Elijah mocked them, saying, 'Cry aloud, for he is a god. Either he is musing, or he's relieving himself, or he's on a journey, or perhaps he is asleep and must be awakened.' And they cried aloud and cut themselves, and as their custom was, with swords and lances until the blood gushed out upon them. And as midday passed, they raved on until the time of the offering of the oblation, but there was no voice. No one answered. No one paid attention." You know, Elijah mocked the prophets of Baal. Perhaps he is sleeping and must be awakened. Is that like our God? Is our God asleep? Does he have to be awakened? When we're asking where is God on our worst days, is he just asleep? That's going to be our question today. Where are you, God, in our worst days? Are you sleeping? I'd like to pray for us real quick because we're going to bring this question to God in humility. But I think it's a worthwhile question because we've all experienced this. So let's pray. And I think God has a story for us to look at today. God, there's pain and there's suffering in this world. There's probably many in this room, myself included, that have gone through this. And these dark days, Lord, and the dark days that many of these brothers and sisters are experiencing right now around the world, that question may be very near and dear to our heart. Where are you? Where are you? Are you sleeping? God, we come with this question humbly and in faith and ask you to lead us today. We want to hear from you. Amen. So the story we're going to be looking at this morning is actually in the book of Mark. And if anybody wants to follow along, it's in Mark chapter 4. And the context of this is Jesus has just finished a full day of preaching. He's been preaching to a large crowd all day. And as custom, I guess they were preaching by the water, and he would put the disciples in the boat, and they would go somewhere. So we're going to pick up our story in Mark chapter 4, verse 35. "On that day, when evening came, he said to them, 'Let us go across the other side.' And leaving the crowd, they took with him on the boat, just as he was. And other boats were with him, and a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking in the boat so that the boat was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. And they woke him and said to him, 'Teacher, don't you care? Don't you care that we are perishing?' And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said, 'Peace, be still.' And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. He said to them, 'Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?' And they were filled with great fear and said to one another, 'Who then is this that even the wind and sea obey him?'" So again, the context is after a long day of preaching, Jesus puts his disciples in the boat, and they're heading to their next destination. And what happens? A great storm. A great storm comes up. And we know it was a great storm because these were professional fishermen, right? They were professional fishermen. If they're freaking out, it's obviously a pretty big storm. Now, this story, for some reason, always reminds me of flying. I don't know if anybody else in the room can share this incredible fear of flying. I don't know if any... Thank you. All right. Not alone. This incredible fear of flying. And I don't know about you guys, but like, I honestly, I think I'd just feel better if I had a steering wheel in front of me. it doesn't have to do anything. I just want to feel like I'm in control. And, you know, I've always enjoyed what John Ortberg says about us wanting to be in control. He said, you know, come on, guys, we live on a giant rock that exists in a cold, lifeless vacuum, invisibly tethered to a nuclear fireball. Yet we think we're in control. So there's our happy thought for the day. Christy will probably put that on Facebook. But, you know, can you imagine being in a plane with that turbulence hitting? I mean, we've got some career flyers here. I'm sure some of us have seen some pretty dicey flights. But can you imagine being in a plane with turbulence so severe that you think it's going to go down, and you look behind you, and the pilot is sacked out? We're going to have the same reaction the disciples did. Don't you care? Let's go wake this guy up. Don't you care that we're about to crash? Don't you care that we're about to die? The disciples are in the middle of their worst day, and Jesus is asleep. And they have to ask the question, don't you care? And what happens? Jesus wakes up, and he rebukes the wind. That great storm becomes a great calm almost immediately. But he also rebukes the disciples. Why are you so afraid? Where is your faith? Why are you so afraid? Where is your faith? You know, sometimes we read these miracles that Jesus does. I have to wonder if it was easier for him to do a miracle in nature than to do a miracle in the disciples' hearts. You know, even Elijah, when he was mocking the prophets of Baal, maybe your God is asleep. The very next scene, when Jezebel is chasing him, he's freaking out. God, this isn't fair. And we're not immune to that. God, why do you allow this storm but stop this storm? Why does this hurricane devastate Puerto Rico, but this one just, at the last minute, skip Tampa? But the miracle does happen. That great storm becomes a great calm. But something else interesting happens, doesn't it? The fear, the disciples' fear of the storm, becomes a fear of Jesus. Who is this? Who is this that even the wind and sea obey him? The disciples thought they were waking up Jesus, but Jesus woke them up. You know, if Donnie were here today, he'd probably say the disciples got woke. But since I'm not as cool as Donnie, we're just going to leave that where that is, and we'll move on. But the disciples are asking, don't you care? Don't you care, Jesus? His response is, where is your faith? A time out, Jake. Are you saying that when we want to ask that question, where are you, God, that we're going to hear a rebuke? Where is your faith? Is that really what God's going to say? Where are you? And he's going to say, where is your faith? Maybe. Maybe. There's something else interesting about this story. Jesus was asleep. He was asleep. Has anybody ever wondered why he could sleep in that storm? I mean, yeah, he was probably tired. He was preaching all day, but he was sacked out. You know, and if I contrast this story with another one, there's another story further down towards the end of Jesus' ministry, another night. It was a calm night, but Jesus couldn't sleep. But his disciples couldn't stay awake. He was praying so much, he was sweating tears of blood. He knew what was about to take place. A pastor down in D.C. wrote a book, Mark Batterson, and in it he says, the purpose of life is not to arrive safely at death. That is a true statement for everyone except for Jesus. He knew exactly why he had come, and he knew when his time had come, and on the eve of his death, he could not sleep. But his disciples could not stay awake. See, the disciples wanted Jesus to wake up when they thought they were going to die. But Jesus knew he was going to die, and his disciples, he could not keep his friends awake. Friends, here's a question. Today, are we awake to God's worst day? Are we awake to God's worst day? I think if God could have been in that small group so many years ago and answering that icebreaker question, what was your worst day? He may have had two. The first one was that day in the garden when Adam and Eve decided not to trust him and set all of human history on a course that God had never hoped for us. The second was probably Calvary's Hill with his son on the cross. There's a story of a little boy that made a model boat. And he put so much passion and energy and attention to detail in his little boat, and so much love and caring into every piece of string holding the sails and every little piece of paint. And he was so excited about the day that he took it down the riverside to try it out. And it almost worked too well. And as the wind picked up and started carrying his boat away from him, he dove in the water at the last desperation to try to catch his boat before it sailed off, and he lost it. And 3 weeks later, walking down Main Street, he sees his little boat in a storefront. And he walks in and says, Mister, that's my boat. And he goes to grab it, and the owner says, no, son, that's my boat. I bought it. If you want it, you can buy it back from me. The little boy works and earns money and gives up all of his savings to come back and buy his boat. And as he's leaving the store, clinging and holding to his little boat, he says, boat, you're twice mine. You're twice mine. I made you and I bought you. You are twice mine. Are we awake to God's worst day? His worst day on that cross that led to our salvation. We are twice his. I think if we're awake to that, then yeah, our question does change a little bit. Where are you, God? Where is your faith? Now, I know this is not easy to hear. This is not an easy message to preach. It's not an easy message to hear. And I think in my own journey, I had a moment just like this. I had a moment where I was asking, God, where are you? Are you sleeping? Where are you, God? And I'm not going to share the whole context of my story because it's not to be not authentic. It's just I think there's probably folks in this room that have much worse stories than mine, and I don't want to detract from that. But this was my personal story, and I was standing in a closet. I was having my worst day. I was standing in my closet, and I don't know what set me off, but I was just on the verge of so much anger at God, and something just didn't. Anyways, I just boiled over, and I started punching the clothes in my closet. And I know I'm totally right now setting myself up for much ridicule next Friday during my men's group, because I know real men don't punch clothes. We punch trees or we punch brick walls or something like that. But that was me. I was punching clothes and I was kicking, and I was really just kicking and punching God. I was so mad at him. And I'm in this fit, and I'm kicking and I'm crying, and some of you guys know I've got a really bad knee. I had a severe dislocation in middle school, and it led to a whole bunch of surgeries, and it's been been a thorn in my life for as long as I can remember. And in the midst of kicking and crying at God, my knee locks up. My knee locks up, and I trip and I fall to the ground as I'm just lying there as a mess on the ground, holding my knee and crying. And I look up, and there's no reason for this, but on this box above me in my closet, there's this cross. There's this magic marker of a cross. I'm not saying we're going to find, you know, the Mother Mary and a slice of cheese or something like that, but there's that little wink of from God that, you know, just to remind me. And as I'm sitting there on the floor holding my knee and clutching my pain, I'm reminded of his pain. And I have to roll over onto my knees and worship. And I think our questions just look different in light of the cross. There's nothing wrong with having questions, with having doubts, and nothing here diminishes from that suffering that we feel, from that pain. I think the point here is that Jesus' sufferings make him approachable with our sufferings. Where can we go with that question? Where can we go with that question? Where are you, God? Are you sleeping? I think it starts back to that question that the disciples had to wrestle with. Who is this? Who is this? We have to take that question to the cross. We have to take that question to Jesus. And as Christ followers, we must be prepared for that response. Where is your faith? Where is your faith? Not in a what, but in a who. Where is your faith in me? That question, where are you, God, might become, where are you, Jesus? Are you asleep? No. I was up all night praying for my Father's will to be done. Where is your faith in me? Don't you care, God, that I'm perishing? Maybe that question becomes, Jesus, don't you care that we're perishing? Look at my hands. Look at my feet. Look at my side. Of course I care. Where is your faith in me? Where are you, God, during my worst days? Where are you, Jesus, in my worst days? I suffered my worst day on a cross to end one day, to end worst days forever. And now I've gone before you to prepare a place for you, and I'm coming back for you. Where is your faith in me? Now, I think if anybody could have gotten a pass on that rebuke from Christ, where's your faith in me? It'd probably been my buddy Teal. He probably could have gotten a pass on that one. And I wish he could have been here today to share his story, but he's in Ghana right now, and he's posting on Facebook all the incredible stuff that God is doing right now. And I wish he could have been here to share the rest of the story, because, yeah, he did become a U.S. refugee. He did find a loving host family. He did find a loving relationship with Jesus. And Steph and I had a chance to have lunch with Teal and Rose a couple weeks ago. I'm not sure if we have their picture up there. They're just a beautiful family. And they've got a little boy, Thomas, who's 10 years old. 10 years old. Same age as, there they are. Same age as Teal when he had his worst day. And over lunch, they share with us that they're feeling God's calling to become missionaries back to South Sudan. To go back to South Sudan. I want to read you the letter that they gave us. And they're titling this, The Journey of Undying Hope. The Journey of Undying Hope. South Sudan is in a desperate need for transformational leadership and discipleship. We feel called back to South Sudan as missionaries, utilizing our backgrounds, experiences, education, and expertise to effect change. We are committed and dedicated to training South Sudan national and state leaders, youths, churches, as well as street children, through training the trainers, discipleship, mentorship, and education. It would be a great honor and pleasure if you could consider partnering with us to transform South Sudan and help bring about peace, unity, and stability to our country of origin. This is an opportunity, not an obligation, to be a part of a grand vision geared towards changing the hearts and minds, renewal of minds. Church, where does hope like that come from? Where does faith like that come from? Teal and Rose and little Thomas believe that they're going to go back to South Sudan and see the church rise and shine. Where is your faith? Teal can answer that question. My faith is in Jesus. And he believes that he is going to see the church rise and shine in South Sudan. In Paul's letter to the Ephesians, he writes, Awake, O sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Look carefully then how you walk, not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of time, because the days are evil. Translation, rise and shine. You know, in a couple of weeks at our Easter service, we're going to remember again, we're going to celebrate that Jesus was first to rise and shine. I think today he invites us, his body, his church, to do just that, to rise and shine. You know, we want to, in the storms of this life, we want to beg the question, God, where are you? Where are you on our worst days? But the garden asks a different question. Are we awake to his worst days? Jesus rose and he shines, and he can shine in our lives. And I think we can be a church that does just that. We can rise and shine. Are we awake to the suffering that many are still going on in this world today? We may not know, this side of heaven, why God allows these bad things to happen. I think with Teal's testimony, the testimony of the disciples in scriptures, and the testimony of maybe some of us here in this room, we know that God can take that brokenness, he can take that pain, he can take that suffering. In some ways, he can recycle it, he can repurpose it, and he can give us a heart and a compassion for those that are going through those circumstances now, that we can be a church that will rise and shine. Now, I want to invite the band back up, and I think we're going to be taking communion this morning. This was not a, this was kind of like the This Is Us sermon for CPKI. This is not an easy sermon. It wasn't an easy sermon for me to hear myself, but There's probably four thoughts going through our minds right now. One, some of us in the room might just be like, I'm not believing this stuff. You know, this whole religion thing, it's just a crutch. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think there's a lot of us here today that could testify that it's a lot better to be in the boat with Jesus during the storms than to be in the boat by ourselves. So maybe this morning, you just want to think that through. Maybe God's touching your heart in that way. For some of us this morning, maybe that pain is just a little too fresh, just a little too raw. And we're not ready to talk about that yet. We might just still be in the cave. You know, Steph and I have been through this, and a few years ago, a good friend of ours told us, guys, don't think about the testimony right now. Don't think about the testimony right now. Just cling to Jesus. Maybe a word of encouragement this morning. The cave is where God does some of his best work. The cave is where God brings dead things back to life. You know, for some of us this morning, maybe we're thinking this through and we're just not ready. Like, we're still angry. We're still angry at God for not being there. If I could be so bold to ask a question. You know, sometimes I think it might be easier for us to bring our sin to the cross than to bring our brokenness to the cross and allow him to do a healing in our life. And maybe today we just need to be like that woman who just reaches out to touch the tip of his robe and then expect him to heal us. I think for most of us also, that pain might be in the past. Might be in the past. And maybe we buried it, but we buried it alive. And it's time to bring it to Jesus today. And allow him to recycle it. Allow him to repurpose it. Allow him to change our hearts towards those that are suffering now. If God wants to speak to you, I'm actually going to ask some of the ministry leaders to come up and be available for prayer. Feel free to come up and remember his sacrifice, to take the bread and the wine and draw near to him this morning. The band's going to play a song. We're going to have communion. There will be some ministry leaders up here for prayer. If anybody would like prayer, feel free to just stay in your seat and do business with God right there. Can we be a church that rises and shines this morning?